This is the Pete Bradley Show podcast, episode 24, news and comment for the final week of March. Coming up today, baseball, some new competition for the NFL, a look at some local stores, some that are coming, one that's going, and our new appreciation for Sister Jean. Those stories and more coming up. Well, how are you? I meant to do this broadcast a couple of days ago. I was going to record this podcast, but the roofers showed up. We lost a few shingles and all of those nor'easters. So Carefree Homes came and did all the work in one day. They totally redid the roof. We had a 30-year-old roof and not too much rot up there. They got it all done in one day. Yeah, no podcast was going to happen that day, though. Talk about loud. Bring on the baseball season. The Red Sox open the season Thursday in Tampa. All right, Pete's pick. I think it's going to be a good year for the Red Sox. I predict a good year for Andrew Benintendi. J.D. Martinez should do what he's been hired for. And I feel like the pitching staff should have a good year. I predict the Sox will make the playoffs. And I predict they will win the American League East. Opening day at Fenway Park is April 5th, and groundskeepers working hard to make sure the field will be ready, even with the weather we had this winter. The grounds crew uses black sand to melt the snow. The sand absorbs the heat from the sun, melting the piles. David Mellor, who is the senior director of grounds at Fenway Park, said after the last snowstorm, they were able to melt 14 inches of snow from the field in 24 hours with that black sand. Throwback Thursday recently at PeteBradley.com, we looked at the Red Sox opening day lineups over the years. 10 years ago in 2008, Dustin Pedroia led off. Most of these names you'll recognize. Kevin Youkilis at first, David Ortiz, the DH. Manny Ramirez was in left field. Brandon Moss was in right field. Don't remember too much about Brandon Ross. Then we had Jason Varitek behind the plate, Jacoby Ellsbury in center, Julio Lugo was the shortstop, and Daisuke Matsusaka was on the mound for opening day 2008. 20 years ago, in 1998, we had Noma at shortstop. John Valentin was the third baseman. Mo Vaughn was over at first base. Reggie Jefferson was the DH. Troy O'Leary played left. Scott Hattieburg was the catcher. Darren Lewis was in center. Darren Bragg was in right. Donnie Sadler played second base 20 years ago. And Pedro Martinez got the opening day start. 30 years ago, let's see how your memory does with this, 1988, Brady Anderson was in center field. Marty Barrett at second base. Wade Boggs at third. Jim Rice in left batting cleanup. Mike Greenwell was in right field. I don't remember Dwight Evans playing first base. But he did 30 years ago, according to this, in 1988. Sam Horn was the DH. Rich Gedman was the catcher. Spike Owens, the shortstop, and Roger Clemens on the mound. And 40 years ago today, Jerry Remy on opening day was at second base. Rick Burleson at shortstop. Jim Rice was the DH. Yaz was in left. Pudge behind the plate. Fred Lynn had center field. George Scott was still playing first base. Dwight Evans was in right, Butch Hobson was at third, and the opening day starter was Mike Torres. Heard an interesting football story this week. Charlie Ebersol, the son of former NBC sports president Dick Ebersol, will be launching the Alliance of American Football, along with Pro Football Hall of Famer Bill Polian. The league will air its first game February 9th of 2019. So not that far away. They'll start right after the Super Bowl and have some different rules that could make things interesting. There will be no kickoffs. Teams will start at their own 25-yard line. While this does eliminate onside kick attempts, teams can try to keep possession after they score. That team would be given the ball at their own 35-yard line, and it would be 4th and 10 to begin the drive. Now, if they convert the 4th and 10, they get to keep possession. But if not, the other team will gain possession and have some pretty good field position. Another twist, there will be no extra points. After you score a touchdown, you have to go for two from the two-yard line. And the league reportedly has a deal in place to air the games on CBS and CBS Sports Network, as well as on their own mobile app. There will be eight teams, the locations and names of which have not been announced. The AP said warm weather locations are most likely, given the fact that the schedule will be February through April. A couple of local stories this week. Amy Shivaroli of the Sandra Times wrote about some new stores coming to the area. Newbury Comics will be coming to the Dartmouth Mall. That store will open this spring near Victoria's Secrets. In the fall, Forever 21 will open near Yankee Candle, and Eblen's will open in a space near Lids. Newbury Comics, Forever 21, and Eblen's will also be hiring new employees for those locations. And Bob's Furniture Store has received approval for the first phase of construction at 53 Fonts Corner Mall Road. Joel Gonsalves announced on Facebook and Twitter that the Surrey Jewelry Services now has a new location in the What a Fine Furniture Consignment Store in Fairhaven. That's formerly Modern Galleries. He'll be there providing watch batteries, watch bands, and jewelry repairs, gold and silver buying, and much more. You can check him out online at SurreyJewelryServices.com. And we learned this week that Fairhaven True Value Hardware is closing. After 62 years, the store at 23 Pope's Island is closing as the owners Bob and Mike Chandler are retiring. The store is a third-generation family-owned business. The Chandler family purchased the business in 1956. I'll be honest, I haven't really been following college hoops this year, but I have enjoyed the story of Sister Jean.
This is really my first NCAA appearance and at a real game. I've watched on television for years before all you guys were born, and I've watched, but never have I attended one before, and I've loved every second. It's been such a great trip for me.
Loyola Chicago's biggest fan is the team chaplain who prays with the players before games and gives them scouting reports the next day. 98-year-old Sister Jean Dolores Schmidt has become a viral sensation.
I'm happy for us, for my community, for Loyola, for the city of Chicago, and for the world, because we have people watching us all over the world.
She played high school basketball in San Francisco in the 1930s, but now gets around in a wheelchair because of her broken hip. She also has her own bobblehead. The National Bobblehead Hall of Fame Museum in Milwaukee started selling the official Sister Jean Loyola Ramblers bobblehead on Friday the 23rd. Within 40 hours, more than 5,000 had been sold, making it the best-selling bobblehead in the museum's history. That's about 107 bobbleheads sold every 2 minutes. The bobbleheads retail for $25, but on eBay, some people are selling them for over $300. A new study recently reveals that motherhood is actually the equivalent of working two full-time jobs. A new study found that mothers start their day at 6:23 in the morning, and it doesn't end until 8:31 at night. In total, the survey of 2,000 mothers found that a mother's work week totals 98 hours of work, which translates into 2.5 times more than the average job. The study also shows that the average mother only gets an hour and 7 minutes of time to herself. So did you watch the porn star? That's not a question I ask often. Stormy Daniels was on 60 Minutes. Just a couple of thoughts. They allegedly had a thing, she and Donald Trump. She says it was consensual. She accepted the money and says she wouldn't talk, but now she talks. Does anyone else think this is weird? Maybe it was a campaign donation violation. I don't know. If she was threatened, well, that's wrong. I don't know. Her lawyer declined to specify additional evidence that he claims he has of the affair, adding that it would make no sense for us to play our hand. I guess it ain't over yet. This is an interesting baseball story. His name is Shohei Ohtani, a baseball star in Japan who is now in the United States. Maybe you saw a story on 60 Minutes about this guy. Well, for folks who write the code that tracks stats for fantasy baseball websites, Ohtani's two-way talents have caused quite a conundrum. And yes, I'm glad we had a use for the word conundrum. At CBS Fantasy Baseball headquarters in Fort Lauderdale, Eric Chalinski and his team have been burning the midnight oil trying to figure out how to develop a formula to handle the Japanese star. Ohtani has the tools to become an unprecedented fantasy baseball star, but only if the game can adapt to accommodate him. The quandary faced by Chalinski and others, how does a game predicated on separating hitters from pitchers account for a player who can do both? Now, two-way play isn't unheard of in the majors. Brooks Kieschnick did it with the Brewers in 2003, and Padres catcher Christian Bethencourt experimented with it last year. But nobody in the fantasy baseball era has ever done both at a level that would warrant any interest from fantasy players. Even when homer-hitting pitchers like Madison Bumgarner don't generate enough offensive power to provide fantasy value, the league usually disregards any pitcher's offensive talents. Fantasy baseball and the software that supports it is structured on the idea that baseball has two types of players. There are hitters and there are pitchers. Batters earn points for stats like home runs, RBIs, and batting average. Pitchers contribute with figures like wins, saves, and ERA. But what happens if one player becomes a worthwhile contributor on both sides? At CBS, they decided their best move was to rewrite the site's code to support Ohtani as a hitter or a pitcher, but not both at the same time. That means if you draft Ohtani, you can slot him as either a batter or a pitcher for each scoring period, but they only get credit for the contributions on that side of the ball. ESPN has implemented an identical system. Now, the drawbacks to this plan: if Ohtani hits a home run and throws seven scoreless innings on that day, frustrated owners would only get points for one of those accomplishments. Is this guy any good? Well, we did find this on YouTube.
Now, you sat with the scout and you watched Shohei. What did you learn today?
Yeah. Boy, in talking to the scout, you definitely learn a lot. One of the things that the scout told me is, look, he's 23 years old. He has never pitched above the Japanese League, which is a strong league, but it's not the highest level of baseball in the world like the major leagues. He probably should be starting out in the minor leagues. This scout said he probably should be at A-ball right now.
Pedro Gomez from ESPN. Lauren Zitomirsky is a Disney movie production lawyer. He is on a singular quest to break the world record for the fastest marathon ever run backwards. The 33-year-old, who's known on social media as Backwards Guy, hopes to accomplish the feat at the Boston Marathon to raise money and awareness for an epilepsy cure. He told the Associated Press recently that he was trying to figure out how to raise interest in his awareness campaign when someone suggested that he go for world record. So he started looking into it. He said most of the records were kind of cheesy for the fastest marathon run while dressed as a clown, stuff like that. Then he stumbled upon the record for fastest backward marathon. The current record, by the way, will save you the trouble, is 3 hours, 43 minutes, and 39 seconds. Beating it would mean running backward at a pace of about 8.5 minutes per mile. Zitomirsky says he's worked himself up to 45 backward miles per week, but he says he can't emphasize how hard it is. He said you use 33% more energy running backwards than forwards. My wife and I have started the Great Bakery Tour. Yeah, we went to a place called The Baker on Pleasant Street in New Bedford the other day, and it was fantastic. We had something that was a strawberry cream-filled pastry that had Nutella icing on top and was rolled in chopped hazelnuts. Oh, yeah. That was when we decided that we should go on the Great Bakery Tour, hitting a different bakery each week. So next week, we'll head to Lydia's in New Bedford. And if you have any suggestions, let me know. Some interesting stories in the news for this week. A reminder, if there's something you'd like to hear in a future podcast, we would love to hear from you. You can comment on PeteBraley.com, send a tweet to @PeteBraley, or email Braley.Pete @gmail.com. Until next time, take care.